Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Net at Night is provided by AOL Music and Spinner.com, where you can get free MP3s, exclusive interviews, and more.
This is Net at Night with Amber MacArthur and Leo Laporte, episode 131 for December 17th, 2009. Merlin and the Aardvark. Net at Night is brought to you by the new voice-activated Sync, featuring hands-free calling, music search, and turn-by-turn navigation. Available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. For more details, visit SyncMyRidePodcast.com. And by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to Audible.com/night. And follow Audible on Twitter at Audible_com. And by GoToMyPC, the safe way to access your PC remotely that's as secure as online banking. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMyPC.com/night. It's time for Net at Night from Petaluma, California, U.S. of A. I'm Leo Laporte.
And from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, I got it right this time, I'm Amber MacArthur.
You are Amber MacArthur, aren't you? Homeowner. Amber MacArthur.
Yes, new homeowner. I'm very excited about the new purchase just a couple of weeks ago. I talked about it a little bit last week, and I can't wait to move in.
When do you move in? When do you get to occupy?
Well, Leo, this is the thing. It's kind of a floating date. So March 31st is the latest, but if they find something sooner, we could be moving in as early as the beginning of February.
Ah, I get it. I get it.
Yes. Good times. Good
we
times.
Have a great show. We got two old friends on. Actually, a new friend and an old friend. Merlin Mann's going to join us. I'm really excited about that.
I am so excited. I wrote Merlin an email yesterday just to see by chance if he could join. He's always so much fun to have on the show. And first of all, I laughed at the funny reply. If you send Merlin Mann an email, you get quite a humorous reply that he's written. It's quite long about how quickly you should expect a reply, who's answering his emails. If you are paying money for him to do something, he will answer more quickly. And it goes on and on. So
I might have to go there and steal that.
Laughs. Yeah, it's really quite good. It's quite entertaining. So he is going to join us and hopefully stick with us for a good amount of time during the show. But we also have another guest. We have someone from Vark.com on, Max Ventilla, who is the CEO of the site.
Very good. What does Aardvark do?
Aardvark is a place where you can go and you can ask questions and someone in the community will reply to that question. So you imagine you probably use Twitter to do a lot of that.
Right.
This is something that is just specific to that specific need. So yeah, crowdsourcing really.
Well, that's exciting. I guess before we get going, you probably have a link or two you would like to mention.
Yes, we have a couple of links before we call Merlin. And the first one I wanted to share, just because we've been doing a lot of these year-ender links over the past couple of weeks, is from Twitter. They have announced the most discussed things on Twitter.
Not the most disgusting, the most discussed.
Disgust, yes. It, most disgusting would probably be interesting.
There'd be quite a bit of it, actually. It's quite a bit.
Yes, there would. Yeah. So really what they've done is they've taken the trending topics and they've put them into individual lists so you can see some of the most common news events, for example, people who are talked about, movies, TV shows, hashtags, which I find the most interesting. Just to give you an example, Music Monday is one of the most popular hashtags of 2009.
Huh. More than Follow Friday?
More than Follow Friday, yeah. Follow Friday is not even on the list as far
really?
As I can tell.
All my friends do Follow Friday. But we have to remember now, Twitter is not just us anymore. It's a large group of other people. And they may not do what we do.
Leo, why are you telling me this?
It used to be just us, our people. And now it's other people. I know there's a lot of young people on because a lot of the hashtags I see, the trending topics I see now, are clearly not for my age group.
Yeah, no. I know. It's definitely changed
a lot of teenagers.
A little bit over time.
So number one hashtag was Music Monday. What's number two?
The Iran election is number two.
I think that's where Twitter really shined this year.
Yeah, with breaking news, any type of news, that's what I love Twitter for. I mean, I found myself with any type of news, whether it was Balloon Boy or whatnot. That was the first place I went to get updates because the conversation was real time there were so many links coming across so quickly. As you can see, number four on this list is swine flu. So right. That was another common topic on Twitter as well.
South by Southwest, number three. Never trust, number five. This is where we get into those games that the kids play on Twitter where they three drunk words is another one that was very big, where they say three words and then they have a hashtag three drunk words. Yeah. It's kind of like they're, you know, it's fun. It's funny, but it's not. But I have to say, people I know, the adults, I follow mostly adults, mostly tech journalists and other journalists. They don't participate in a lot of these.
No. You know, what I see most of is when you go over to the trending topics in the technology column on this list. And this is most of what I see at Google Wave, Snow Leopard, TweetDeck, yeah. Windows 7. Yeah. So obviously we're following the tech community because to me that would be the overall trends for the people who I follow.
How come Amazon Fail is number nine? Amazon must have. Oh, I know what that was.
Yeah.
That's when they deleted the 1984 from the Kindle.
Yes.
Everybody used that tag. Wow.
Yeah, that was a pretty popular one.
Top celebrities, Michael Jackson, Susan Boyle, of course, Adam Lambert, American Idol, Kobe Bryant, basketball player, Chris Brown. Did you see that Chris Brown has deleted his Twitter account today?
He deleted it today. I read some stuff yesterday where he was talking on it, and I think he was sort of yelling at people for not buying his album, but I didn't realize he had deleted it.
He says it's a conspiracy. That people are conspiring on Twitter against him, probably because of the thing with Rhiannon or whatever her name is.
Rihanna.
So I went to twitter.com/Chris Brown. Hold up. Sorry. The profile you're trying to view has been suspended due to strange activity. But I think the story was that I heard on the gossip columns was he'd canceled his account.
Oh, my goodness. You know, some people just think that everybody is talking about them all the time. They think they're just too self-important.
I think it is. I think it's exactly right. I think that's a sign of somebody who's just really, you know, self-involved.
Yeah, that's when they think they're surrounded by people who make them feel as though they're the only person in the world. And the reality is when they walk out of their own little circle, you know, I don't think about Chris Brown ever.
Right.
Not at all, except for him being a jerk for beating up Rihanna, but that's it.
Right. Well, and I think that's probably what happened was that people kind of got on him for that and he didn't like it.
You know what I'm finding funny, though, these days, Leo? I mean, if you see number eight, Tiger Woods is on this list. And what I've noticed more and more with news media outlets is they're actually quoting a lot of what people are saying on Twitter. They're using these people as sources, whether it's celebrities saying stuff. So you'll see a news article, and then instead of being able to get a direct quote, obviously, from a celebrity, they're just pulling in their Twitter feed.
But that makes sense.
Yeah, it totally makes sense.
I mean, you're a news organization. What you'd like to know is, well, what are people saying about this? What's the easiest way to do it? Well, you go to the world's water cooler, which is Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you had a little recorder there around the water cooler, and you could just take what's there. I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it definitely does. And, you know, I think it's a real opportunity for people, you know, not that I feel sorry for celebrities all the time, but it is a platform for them to actually have their own voice and be able to be heard, that it isn't necessarily going through all the filters that they used to have to go through, like their publicists and however it works and how it used to work years ago.
You know, my daughter has a Twitter account, Abby Laporte, and she's got quite a few followers, I think 2,000 or 3,000 followers. And it's very interesting to watch. I think at first she did it, none of her peers do it. But I think she did it because she was doing a podcast. She has 3,189 followers, and I think it was part of the way that she could promote the podcast, Abby's Road Podcast, and so forth. But I think she kind of got into it. And now she's very quickly become one of those people, like you and me and Josh Harris, who live their lives in public. And yesterday, I didn't say anything about it. She had applied early admission to Brown University, and yesterday she found out she was denied. She didn't get in.
I know. I saw that.
But see, that's what's interesting. So I was very careful trying to be the good father, I didn't say anything about it. I was quiet. And she tweets about it. And I thought that was very interesting, that she is living in public. But I don't think that's necessarily the case for her friends. Now, immediately people tweet back. A guy named Justin Leung said he hears from Yale today. It's not quite Facebook. These guys are on Facebook for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they do this. And the thing about Facebook, it's not public facing. It's just your friends who you allow to follow you. Twitter, anybody who wants to follow you can, and I think she's comfortable with the idea of saying, of living in public, which kind of surprises me.
I know. It's interesting. You know, my great uncle died a few weeks ago, and I was very close to him. He was older. He was in his late 70s, and he lives in England. But I'd always known him since I was a little kid and spent a lot of time with he and his wife. And I was very sad when I found out, and it happened that I was in the office alone, and I had no one really to talk to. I didn't want to call anyone up. So I just posted it on Twitter, and it was so nice, the feedback that I got from the community there. You know, just instant messages from people saying that they were really sorry to hear the news. And I never thought I would use a tool like this as an outlet like that, but I find myself more comfortable with it all the time.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. It's very interesting.
It's a different world we live in. And of course now Facebook, and we talked a lot about this on Twit this week, has you probably went there recently and you saw that Facebook is saying, okay, we change your privacy policy and you're going to go in there. And by default, if you hadn't set any privacy policy, they moved all of your information to public.
I know. I wanted to talk about this as another news item just before we get Merlin on. I was surprised because, to be honest with you, I only spent a few minutes on the site when I got the message to go in, and I couldn't believe that they defaulted everything to public. I thought that was pretty rotten of them to do something like that. I don't know what your views are.
Jason Calacanis was livid, wrote a post. We had him on Twit. Oh, boy. On Twitter on Sunday. Nobody else is doing that anymore, but I am. And was really laid into him and said they're either stupid, either they blundered in some bizarre, horrible way, or these guys are really kind of evil. They really are trying to change Facebook from the model that everybody who joined it expected, which is that it's private, that it's an opt-in community, that you choose your friends, you choose who sees your information. They want to be Twitter. They've got Twitter envy. They're changing the face of Facebook to a public face. And that's a significant change in how it works.
I know, and I think that's what people really like about Facebook, is that they have the option to keep it private and some of their messages just, you know, among their friends and their family who they've accepted as friends on the site, and, you know, photos and all those things. So I've always seen it as a much more private network than Twitter, but now, as people
probably know,
even things that you're posting there will be searchable in based on these new settings, and I think a lot of people don't understand that, and it will be a surprise to a big group.
I understand that they've got Twitter envy. I understand they want to do this, but boy, I think that was the wrong way to go about it. Mm-hmm. Hey, let's get Merlin Mann on. Maybe he has an opinion on this and everything else. Merlin, the productivity guru, former host of MacBreak Weekly, although he still shows up from time to time. But when he produced his most important production, his daughter Eleanor, he decided to spend more time with his family. We're very lucky to be able to talk to him in just a little bit. I'm going to hang up on you again because the whooshing sound is coming back.
No problem.
Call you right back.
Okay.
Rogers, I'm sure.
Hello?
Yeah. It's fine, and then it comes on. It starts doing it. I don't know. What kind of headset are you using?
I've been using this one for quite a few weeks. It's new. So I don't know if I have another one.
No. Just what kind is it? So I can.
It's called Everyman. Someone just sent it to me, so I don't know. But I have a lot of headsets.
I wonder if that's it. Here, do me a favor and unplug, just so I can tell if it's it.
Sure. Hold on a second. You want me to just unplug and plug back in?
Just unplug for a minute. If the whooshing goes away, then we'll know where it's coming from. Went away.
I'm unplugged, Leo.
You know what it is? It's Skype gating it up or something. Huh, that's really weird.
Yeah, I'm not plugged in anymore.
I only hear it when you're talking now. You can plug it back in.
Okay.
I keep meaning to send you a better mic. We'll send you a better mic. We got to find an alternative to Skype at some point. See, that's fine now.
Okay.
It's weird. I don't know.
That's strange.
Before we go on, get Merlin on here, I would like to mention our friends at Citrix, the folks who do that great Go to My PC product. Look, I know you're going away. I hope you're going away for the holidays. Maybe at least not spending time in the office, going home early, taking a day or two off. But it's really scary to take time off sometimes, knowing that you're going to get 1,000 messages in your inbox when you get back, that there's all sorts of stuff waiting. Maybe stuff that you'll miss. Go to My PC is the solution for this. It lets you go home early, lets you spend more time on vacation, lets you travel, and still have access to your office computer, no matter where you are. Maybe you've avoided Go to My PC. I'm sure you've heard about it by now, because you thought, is it secure? Is it safe? Is it easy? Yes, yes, and yes. 128-bit encryption means it's completely secure. Is it easy? Couldn't be easier. All you have to do is go to gotomypc.com/night right now. www.gotomypc.com/night. Within a minute or two, you'll have it installed. You don't have to worry about the firewall or the router. It automatically and securely configures all of that using something called NAT traversal, which is the safest, best way to do this. You don't DMZ a machine. You don't port forward. It just does it for you in a safe way. And then you've got a completely secure connection wherever you are. Even if you're at a kind of sketch internet cafe, you could use this like a VPN to surf safely, to check your email, send and receive email, and more. PC World gave it their world-class award for best remote access software once again this year. I don't know how, I've lost count of how many times it's won. It's just the best. Try it right now, absolutely free, just in time for the holidays. Go to mypc.com/night. If you're thinking, maybe I have to go in New Year's Eve, maybe I have to go in Christmas Eve, no! Put Go to My PC on your computer. You can stay home and enjoy the family. GoToMyPC.com/night. We thank them so much for their support of the Net at Night show. Let's get Merlin Mann on here.
All right, let's do it. I have not talked to him for a very long time. So.
Oh, man, he's just the greatest. He's doing really well. We had him on the Mac Break Weekly a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, good. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can't wait to hear about what he's doing. And I see little tidbits on Twitter, but... under, I think he's Hot Dogs Ladies, maybe?
Yep. He's working on, that's his Twitter account, Hot Dogs Ladies. It comes from Confederacy of Dunces.
Hello?
There he is, the Hot Dogs Lady man himself, Mr. Merlin.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, Merlin. How are you?
I'm doing swell. Is this on the internet right now?
Always, baby. You ought to know
Merlin.
That by now.
Hi, Amber. How's it going?
Good, I miss you.
Oh, I see you on the internet, but I haven't seen you in person in a really long time.
No, it's better on the internet, Merlin.
It really is.
Are you on the same continent? Where are you, Amber? You look very far away. What is that on your head? You look very, very far away.
She's distant.
I am very far away, up in the Great White North in Canada.
I bet you never get sick of that, do you?
Merlin, turn on your camera so we can see your
Oh, it's not on? Mic. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I gotta go to
for those of you who are listening, we do broadcast this show live every Tuesday afternoon at 7 o'clock Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific at live.twit.tv. So you could see people like Mr. Gummy Bear there. Is that a gummy bear?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's for the kids, not for you.
I woke up this morning not realizing I was going to be on internet TV. So
that, you know what, Merlin? You always look like that.
Yeah.
Do you shave ever?
You're very unkind. Yeah, I mean, you can't keep this maintained by not shaving. You got to shave just a little bit.
They make razors for that.
Yeah, you know, remember when Miami Vice was popular?
Yeah.
You need a gummy bear. Yeah. They had something called the Miami Device.
Right.
And it was, you get it, and you get just the right level of Johnson.
Wow, I don't know where to go.
Look at that hair. Holy cow. Woo. Just the right level of Johnson. That's what we're talking about.
How are you guys doing? What are you guys up to?
Oh, well, you know, we're doing Net at Night. Amber and I never stopped. We just, you know, kept doing the show. She had a baby, bought a house.
I know.
She's been busy.
Crazy. I've been, busy. So has Leo. He hasn't had any more children, though. So, but Merlin, you had a baby as well.
Yeah, but I mean, I saw yours there on the Flickr. My gosh, nice work.
Thanks.
That's really good work. Yeah, my daughter's two. And she's she's giant. She's really tall.
Eleanor is two?
Yeah, she's two and a little over a month. Yeah.
Now, with a name like Eleanor, you have a lot of ways you can go. You could be your Ellie. You could be your Nori.
We've gone with Smellinor.
Smellinor.
Elignor. I think it's nice.
Elignor. That's not so
We're trying to pick out every kind of taunting name that we could, you know, we want to get her used to that so she's not jarred when she enters elementary school.
Do you have a pet name for her?
We call her Ellie.
Ellie's good. I like Ellie a lot.
You like it, Amber? Is it fun? This isn't very Net at Nighty, but do you like the kid thing?
Oh my goodness, it's amazing. And Connor will be one in February. I can't believe it. And it's the best thing I ever did. You know, I wish I had kids when I was younger, but I have to say that it really changes your life in such a positive way. It just puts everything in perspective. And, you know, I could have a stressful day and come home and he could just giggle at me and I could be goofy. I'm pretty immature. So I think that it brings out that part of me, which I love.
Yeah. It's nice you're at the point where they stop being a lump. You know, for a long time, all they do is kind of eat and poop and cry. And then at a certain point, they poop and cry, and then they smile a little bit. Say, this is really good. Is your audience enjoying this?
Usually they smile right after they eat and poop. So.
Yeah. Do your kids still poop? What's the deal with that?
They still poop, but they don't involve me in any way, which is good. I'm glad. I'm grateful. Actually,
we were talking
earlier about Abby, who is applying to colleges right now. She learned yesterday. She applied early admission to Brown. And I was saying she twittered on this, which it shocked me that she didn't get in. And that's kind of the new thing, I guess, is being very public about both your successes and your failures.
It's because that's transparency, they call that?
I guess that's what it is. And I guess kids today, they do it naturally.
You don't believe in that, Merlin?
School. That's a very costly school, Leo. That would have cost you a lot of money, wouldn't it?
She's going to a costly school anyway. I don't think that there's any way she's choosing the school by cost. She's not like saying, let me save daddy some money and go to Sonoma State. That ain't happening. And you better get ready for it too, Merlin.
Yeah. The curve is not looking good right now.
No, she's smart. When a kid is smart, same with Connor, you know. Does Canada pay your college tuition, Amber?
No, but it's subsidized. So, for example, McGill is the best university that we have in the country. It's a fantastic school. And I think for Canadians, I mean, the tuition can't be much more than, I don't know, $10,000 maybe.
Wow.
Maybe a little bit more, but
that's
I know my
quarter.
Brother went there.
Yeah, that's a quarter of what it would cost. Now, by the way, Abby's interested in applying to McGill.
She should, Leo.
Yeah, I would love that. That's in Montreal, right?
Yeah, it's in Montreal. She speaks French. She would love it. It's a fantastic city, and it's in Canada, so that's always good.
Yeah, I think she would. I think she'd be very interested. That was on her list. I think now Oberlin in Ohio, which is near Toronto, would be one place that's on her list.
It's cool.
Yeah, Claremont. Where did you go to school, Merlin?
I went to school in Florida, in Sarasota. It was a school called New College, which is a little liberal arts school.
Cool. So that's the thing. There's some great small liberal arts schools that are wonderful.
Totally. I mean, the thing is, Leo, you got to get to leverage the in-state thing. Otherwise, you're going to take a bath. It's like a bath going to another state. It's crazy.
You know, even the state schools here, you know, University of California is pretty pricey. It's all right.
Oh, are you kidding me? You go to UC now. Oh, my gosh. Forget it.
I've been saving since last March. I'm prepared.
Good. That's good. You clip coupons and you put a little bit aside every week. And I think
and you have your tip jar, Leo, so you're all set.
This is Abby's college fund. And you know, we've been putting money in there. And, you know, I think by the time she goes to school, we'll have...
I got Eleanor's college fund. I'm just going to start it right now.
Good luck with that. Hey, Merlin, I don't know if you were listening earlier on, but we were talking a little bit about Facebook privacy and some of the new settings that are available. Are you familiar with that at all? Or?
To be honest, I've just kind of been hearing... I think my tea's ready. I've just been hearing...
Go ahead, get your tea. Go ahead.
So unprofessional.
No, you should have your tea.
No,
this is important.
I've been what other people say. Now, bring me up to speed on this. They've changed the default settings.
Here's what happens. I don't know if you've logged into Facebook in the last
week.
On
a year and a half.
Yeah. Okay. You go there, in the last week, they started popping up a thing saying, our privacy settings have changed, and they invite you to go there. Now, Amber, this is my understanding. If you go there, if you've already changed the settings in any way from the default, it will give you the option to stick with what you did. In other words, keep the old settings or move it to everyone. If you never set your settings, that's the people who get automatically set to everyone.
Yes, I think you're right. And since I never touched my settings because just I care less about privacy. I have nothing really to hide. So I didn't manipulate the settings at all. So by default, then everything goes public.
Which is exactly what shouldn't happen. In fact, we tried to call my mom on a Twit this Sunday because I wanted to talk to an inexperienced, you know, non-technical user to see. And I asked her, I said, Mom, have you ever changed your settings, your privacy settings? She had not. And so she would have been automatically defaulted to everything is visible without her knowledge, permission. She would have gotten that warning, but that's it.
Well, and that includes things like your email, right?
Yeah, phone number, email.
Wow, no way.
Yeah.
Oh, that is messed up. Well, I mean, this gets to a deeper issue, and I'll immediately paper over my complete ignorance of the specifics of this by saying it does get to a much deeper issue, though, which is something I run into every day on Twitter, and for that matter on Tumblr and everywhere, the stuff that I actually use and enjoy, which is that we all use this stuff so differently, and we each bring such a different set of expectations to it. Now, somebody like Amber, I just heard you use the phrase, I think you said, I have nothing to hide. And I'm sure that's, you just mean that in the sense of I don't say things on Facebook that I wouldn't want to say. But on the other hand, do you want your phone number there? You know?
Yeah.
And I think that gets to a deeper issue of expectations in terms of each other. You know, mm-hmm. I think one of the giant problems we've got right now is that we don't have a shared set of expectations about these things. And we shouldn't. But we should be able to understand that each of us will and can use these in very different ways. You know, if you're Robert Scoble and you're basically, you know, announcing every time you move your pencil to the right, you know, that's going to be really different than somebody who sits there and sweats an hour of trying to have a funny toot or something like that. And then somebody like Amber, you see it, I mean, I don't want to say how you see it, but I think a lot of people use it as a way of kind of publishing and broadcasting to the world and doing a selective amount of responding. But I mean, for myself, I use that stuff. I'm not on Facebook because it's useless to me. I use Tumblr and I use Twitter, and I'm a consumer of that. I'm not just a publisher. And I think the problem becomes that we don't have a shared set of expectations, and each company has different standards. Another example that jumps to mind, obviously Facebook is the canonical example, where one of my friends, his kid found out what he was getting for Christmas because they suddenly announced his Amazon purchase.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that was last year. That's one of the things that kind of put me on.
I'm very tempted.
Yahoo started having defaults that were out of control. Yahoo had these defaults on advertising preferences that you had to go and flip a bit if you didn't want basically everybody in the world to start emailing you.
So I'm very tempted to drop Facebook, but that doesn't really address this issue because, as you say, this is not just Facebook. But how important is Facebook to me? Not particularly. There's a good website that somebody just passed along to me in the chat room, dotrights.org. Demand your dot rights. And there's a very long blog piece, What Does Facebook's Privacy Transition Mean for You? That is excellent. I mean, excellent. It says exactly what the options are. Now, mom's not going to read this. People like you and I might read this. People who listen to Net at Night might read this. But this is complicated stuff. And that's really my real concern is that, yeah, we know what to do. We can control our privacy. But the normal person is just going to...
I don't know. Amber's a pretty smart human. And she woke up to find a lot of stuff out there. And personally, Leo, I will not read that. I don't read EULAs. It could say, like we're gonna slice off an ear and like a box, and I'd be like, fine, install the software. But, I mean, but the problem also becomes... one thing that comes to mind is that there's not even really a shared vocabulary about these things. So when we say things like... I think people, they think it's a distinction without a difference. But when we talk about privacy versus security, you know, there's all kinds of different tonalities to this. And I remember a few years ago, it was probably now 6 or so years ago, there was a push to try and have a machine-readable language for any terms of service and privacy policy that would be the equivalent of like an RSS icon. So anytime you went to a page or a site, you would immediately, you could even like set Firefox, for example, hit some radio buttons and have it tell you, hey, you're entering into a place that's going to basically put your information all over the web.
But the truth is these companies really don't want your information to be private because the value to them of this information is selling it and making money off of it. So, you know, we can advocate for something like this. The three of us can advocate for this, but Facebook is going to try as much as possible to obfuscate it and slow it down.
You know what I find too is happening a lot is that companies, especially web companies, are doing things like what Facebook just did with their privacy settings. And then if enough people complain, then they will retract anything that they've done and they'll go back to the old way of doing things. So it's almost like they're doing it knowing that there is going to be some controversy around it. But if the controversy isn't too severe, then they'll continue moving forward. And so it seems like they're just trying to gauge the audiences at large a little bit.
You know, a funny thing happened to Mark Zuckerberg, who presumably would understand these policies and know what to do about it. All of his pictures suddenly were public.
Oh,
that's awesome.
All of his pictures. He didn't right away take them private, but he did. And so clearly this shows you that if even the founder of Facebook can get screwed by this policy, what chance do we have?
I think you nailed it, though. I mean, I don't mean to sound cynical about this, but I think you nailed it when you talked about the business value.
Yeah.
Well, I think the transparently obvious business value of a lot of this stuff is trying to generate page views. you know, whether you think that's a good thing or a bad thing or an whatever thing, that's the basic way to make money. The way to make real money, though, you know, the way to make serious dough is not with run of network stuff. It's to be able to sell
Target.
A contextual ad. Target. Yeah, like right now, I mean, how many things are this? To me, this is so galling. How many sites are there right now that are selling advertising space to people, but then basically treating it as something that you just pay to have taken away as a consumer?
Right.
It's a terrible way to treat your users and a terrible way to treat your advertisers, because it kind of says very cynically that you don't believe this is valuable. So I think what people want to do is to get to a higher CPM and to get to a higher valuation. They're going to have to say, A, this many people are using it, and B, we're serving them in this way with these kind of metrics that show that, you know, sailboat owners are seeing this ad and things
right.
like that.
Right.
Hey, Merlin, I have a quick question for you. I was reading and talking before the show just about your email signature, or sorry, your auto response that comes when you email, when someone emails you. And yeah. It says, if you get paid, you answer more quickly. So are we supposed to be paying you for that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, you should be paying me. I mean, is there any question?
I think the speed with which he's answering shows that we have, in fact, paid him.
You know, I got to tell you, man, that is something I sweat, and it's something that is broken, and it's something I'm doing poorly.
It's broken for everybody, but you're supposed to be the king of this, so you got
to
handle it.
I'm supposed to be the king of this only in as much as I've been bad at it for longer than. But no, I mean, to tell
companies
you the truth,
pay you, Merlin, to help them with their email woes.
Well, I think they pay me to help them ask the right questions. I don't always give the right answers.
Well, that's good. I'm
that's
here.
Good, that's a good couple, but, I'm, but no,
I don't have your answer.
Problem,
I'm here to help you ask questions.
Have you ever done consulting and client services?
No.
You never give anybody an answer.
Just the questions. I only do questions. You have to get the answer.
I think it's true, though. But I mean, you know, the thing is, it's hard. And sounds like one of those kind of boohoo first world things. I'm very high. I love communicating with people. But in order to communicate meaningfully with people, I can't communicate with everybody. And I mean, I think that sounds like a fancy thing to say, but that is an avenue where people who are going to reach me for work are going to write there. People who want to say hi, people from high school are writing there, and people who just want to tell me what a jerk I am right there. And I want to see all of it, but I don't have an easy answer. I think that Tim Ferriss approach of just going like, I don't read email or whatever. I'm putting words in his mouth, but he has a pretty stern auto response that basically says, you know, he's...
Really?
He can speak for himself. He's a big boy, but he's very... It's very important to him, as I read his book, to create a very clear expectation. And I'm more of a wuss, where it is really hard for me to create. So, I don't know. What do you do, Amber? Do you have you're using a different email?
I stay up and answer every email, so I am the biggest wuss among all of us.
The kid, you do that when you got time. You can do that.
Pretty much. I mean, pretty much. But you know what? I probably am not getting the emails that you're getting or Leo's getting.
No,
but
no. What do you say? I mean, do you write like how long a response do you send?
Just thank you, or just I just acknowledged it in some way.
That's nice.
But I mean, that's just, you know, my own personal scenario, and I've been like this since my early days at Call for Help, where I would stay up to the wee hours of morning and answer every emails. But it's I can manage it because, you know, I do get a lot of emails. But again, you know, nothing like Leo gets. I'm sure Leo, you get thousands of emails a day. That's just not realistic for you.
My problem is that most of my emails, we talked about this with Gary Vaynerchuk, remember, Amber, a couple of weeks ago, and he says he answers every email, but most of my emails are not love it, love you, love you, love the show, that's easy, thank you, or here's a great article, thank you, and I do answer those, but a lot of them are, I just bought a plasma TV set and I can't figure out how to get it to work with my PC, and there's no short answer to that.
No.
So I do what Tim Ferriss does. One thing he does is he outsources. But, you know, that's a luxury to be able to get somebody to answer.
This is actually, I mean, not to be pimping my seemingly endless process of writing this book, but to me this is a giant point of what I'm trying to say in this book that I'm putting together, which is that what makes this complicated is not simply the one axis of this being something that's hard to do. The thing that makes our relationship with email and our relationship with all of this communication stuff difficult is that it's really all these problems are made of people. And there's no simple single answer to any of this. There's no system that you can put in place that's going to make this bulletproof. And I'll tell you why. In this case, for example, Amber, I mean, for somebody like you, you're looking at all that email. Somebody like me, I like to imagine that I can just kind of ignore it. But then I'll find out that like somebody I really, really liked a lot in like junior high wrote me an email. And because I'd gone numb to that, I didn't see it. I feel terrible about that. So I think each one of us, for any inbox, if you like, in our life, I think we have a lot of emotional attachment to that based on the likelihood that there could be something in there that we have a very strong attachment to. And all it takes is one thing. I call it the diamond in the compost bin. All it takes is the thought of one thing like that, and a little part of our brain is going to always be looking there. And there's no one solution, because you can't just say, I'm not going to check email, and you can't just say, I'm going to check email all the time. every day, every hour could be different.
Different.
And I think it's about, you nailed it though. I think it's about deciding what you can do about it and then managing an expectation about what a sane adult could do to make this thing run.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was just practicing Operation Inbox Zero, which I learned from you, Merlin, many years ago. So that it's your fault that I'm up late at night answering emails and no one else's.
You're
but
welcome.
At least, you know, with your auto reply, what I love about it is that you use a lot of humor. I mean, it's just fun reading it. So taking that approach, I think, is a good idea for someone who's overwhelmed with email. It was totally entertaining. It was one of the best things I read all day.
I got to steal it. That's all I can say. I have a responder, but it's not very effective.
You remember, Amber, I don't know if I talked to you about this. I think I talked to you about this a long time ago. I've actually pitched this to a mutual friend of all of ours who has a popular communications company. I wanted to have some kind of a way of being able to, like, I don't know, this wouldn't even work probably, but I wanted there to be something almost like bug tracking for email. I wish that there were something where you could manage large amounts of email all at once. And so if something happened, for example, there was some kind of a nonce thing that happened, like suddenly a big thing happened and a bunch of people wrote to you about this one thing, you could craft a fairly similar response that could go to 500 people that you could tweak, you know, something that goes beyond Text Expander or Mail Template. But the trouble is you're still trying to wash your rice one grain at a time. And it's just that each one of those grains of rice is a person. And it's hard to treat those people like human beings because, you know, the thing that makes email hard in particular, in my opinion, what makes it different from Twitter, what makes it different from Facebook, is we have so little control about what ends up in our inbox. And any time that we have less rather than more control, I think that becomes a very emotional issue. And we tend to make outsized investments of time and attention in things that grab us emotionally. I'm prattling on. Sorry.
No, I love this topic.
I think about all day long.
No, but it's an issue to everybody. You know, I think everybody faces their own email issues, whether they have 100 emails coming in or 1,000 emails coming in. You know, most people can't keep up or manage it based on their daily lives. So I think it's something that everybody has to experience and deal with.
We're going to take a break, and we're going to get our guest on from Aardvark, VARK.com. Do you know about Aardvark, Merlin?
Tell me about Aardvark.
Well, hang in there. It's crowdsourcing for your questions. Kind of like people use Twitter, as a matter of fact. I was thinking Twitter might be the perfect vehicle for doing this email bug track system somehow.
Oh, so you'd have people on Twitter answer your email.
Well, there'd be a way. You know, it's like Get Satisfaction. People, you use Get as an example. You can use Twitter that way, too. People monitor.
Totally. And ask Metafilter.
And you could then respond to a large number of people at once with a single response. I don't know. I think that there's some way to use Twitter that way. And the nice thing about Twitter is it compels you to be short, pithy. So nobody can complain. You know, you could just say, well,
totally.
This is all I could do. I only had one line.
I wish I could set my email up so that I could only send 140 characters back to someone.
Well, and was it you who was doing that? Or who was doing that? No, it was Kevin Rose. There's that site, three lines or whatever it is.
Yeah, three sentences,
that's it.
I don't know, here it is, I forgot. Yeah, I bought this domain a long time ago, Twitter email, and my idea was to try and have I'm blowing this idea, but somebody else can run with this. I wanted to have a day where everybody tries to write emails of no more than 140 characters, just as an experiment, because I think you're right. I think it forces us to become better writers and better thinkers, because that scarcity, which otherwise doesn't exist, you know, compels us to be more efficient.
So here's three sentences. Three dot T-H-R-E-E.
There's also five sentences and four sentences.
They own 2, 4, and 5. The problem, email takes too long to respond to, resulting in a continuous inbox overflow for those who can receive a lot of it. The solution, treat all email responses like SMS text messages, setting a set number of letters per response. Since it's too hard to count letters, we count sentences. So I guess you put this link at the end of your email. Two sentences is a personal policy that all email responses, regardless of recipient or subject, will be two sentences or less, three sentences, four sentences, or if you're really verbose, five sentences. Kevin says he's using it.
Good luck with that one.
Yeah.
That's the problem, is it? You know,
you're going to get a lot of responses with one finger.
Yeah. People take it personally if you don't answer or you answer.
Like, but I'm not sorry to be a broken record about this, but that's fine if you want that to be your public policy in terms of managing the expectation. But I find it very difficult to believe that when somebody's mom writes and says, what does registry mean? What do I do this? What's bat.ex? Like, so you're going to only respond to your mom with five sentences? Well, that's different. Okay, well, then let's be honest about that. You know, let's be honest about the fact that this is the frickin' Wild West in terms of expectations. And instead of trying to come up with all these contrivances and tricks, the only way you can manage this is to be dead honest with people. That's all it is. All you have is honesty. All of these tricks are meaningless. Somebody like in my case, the guy who saved my father's life, one of my favorite people in the entire world. I love him more than anybody in the world. All week long, all I get is Obama is a Muslim stuff all the time. What am I going to do? You know, it's like I'm going to write him back and say I only respond, you know, to email in three sentences. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, for every one of these examples, I could probably give you five other examples that show you that it's just going to make your life more complicated rather than simpler. But you know, having said that, you know, there's a trick I learned from, you know, hate to sound like, I'm not trying to sound like a big shot or something, but going out and doing these talks, I end up meeting these really interesting, intelligent people. And I mean, I've learned patterns, I think, more than tricks. And one of the patterns is keep it in motion. So I think one pattern is don't let it pile up. So no matter how long your response is, don't let it sit in your area for too long. Either delete it or do something about it. And if you look at like CEOs and the people who really get stuff done, they're making very, very fast decisions about moving that information around, and they're not moving it just to move it. It's like a basketball game. They will hang back and wait for their shot, and when it's time for their shot, they take one shot. And I think that when you start treating email in particular like that kind of a medium, I think you become much more efficient. And you become much more, in a David Allen kind of way, you become much more action-oriented and outcome-based.
Do you think things like Google Wave or these more interactive solutions are good or bad for that?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. Google Wave is an amazing piece of technology.
Right.
For somebody who used to make crappy websites and crappy web development, it's mind-blowing what Google Wave does. I cannot think of a single problem in the world that it solves for me. It becomes an island that I have to row out to. It's yet another island to row out to.
Yes.
And as much as I have a conflicted relationship with email, every person I talk to at a job says it's the one thing I know everybody uses. Everything touches email eventually. And anytime you say go to the wiki or go to the thing or go to the whatever, the company blog, it's just another place that somebody's got to row out
like
to.
That.
So
another island I got to row out to. I love that. That's a great
analogy. What do you think, Amber?
No, you know what? I totally agree with you. And I actually tell people all the time when people send me messages on Twitter or Facebook, I tell them flat out, listen, I'm really slow and sometimes don't answer all of those messages. The only way that I can assure that you will get a response is by emailing me. Because to me, that's the only destination where I know that I'm on top of it. That's where I manage all of the emails coming. So,
you're never going to say, "Oh, start a Google Wave and we'll talk about it." That's just not a solution.
If you play with it, though, I mean, from a technical standpoint, it is pretty amazing.
Oh, it's great.
So there's when I do these talks, I talk about the notional wiki guy. Like every company's got the wiki guy, and he's like, and somebody goes, "Hey, where's the HR form?" He's
like,
"Oh,
it's
on the wiki. Put it on the wiki."
Right.
And it's like, you know, but the thing is, the people who aren't the wiki guy are like, you know, there's a lot of what's the word I'm looking for? Resistance. To like editing things and changing things.
Just give me the info.
Yeah. Gmail. Yeah. For me, Gmail. It's just everything passes through Gmail now.
Me too. I love Gmail. The only thing I will say, though, when we're talking a little bit about doing email, it reminds me a lot of that whole analogy of going to the gym and just being consistent. And you said, Merlin, just kind of keeping it in motion, which is what I try to do. But then I have this issue, which is probably like the final 10 pounds or 15 pounds for someone, you know, when you can't lose that no matter how much you work out. I always have like 15 or 20 emails floating around in my inbox, even if I answer them over time, that I can never get rid of. It's very difficult to get to zero.
All right, hold that thought. We're going to move on. We've got to get Max on from Aardvark. We have a couple of commercials before that, and there's even more links to talk about too. Hang with us,
Merlin,
for just a little bit.
Stay with us, hopefully.
Can you stick around a little bit more, Merlin?
Yeah, I got nowhere to be. I got gummy bears.
Go get your cup of tea. Get your gummy bears. Relax. Get to it when you want to get to it. Relax. It's now time to talk about my Ford Sync. Ford Sync is the amazing in-car computer that is keeping your eyes on the road, your hands on the wheel, and yet letting you do everything you want. Call, take messages, read on properly equipped phones, read your text messages out loud and let you send, I think there's 15 different messages back. It lets you say, play the Beatles. The Beatles play. It lets you say, tell me what the weather's like. Give me my sports scores. All without, I'm not telling you, look at a screen. It's telling it to you. It's talking to your car. It's like Hal from 2001, except for the thing about locking the door after you get out. It is truly amazing. I want you to take a look at Sync right now. Go to SyncMyRidePodcast.com Or, better yet, go to your Ford, Lincoln, or Mercury dealer and say, I'd like to do a test drive on a car with Sync. You may find Sync in some rental vehicles, too. And if you're coming to CES, we're going to give you little tours of Sync. I have the Mustang down there, and we're going to bring a Ford Flex down there so you can see Sync in action. Amazing, amazing stuff. I could say, call Merlin Mann on the mobile phone. If I had his number, I would. I could say, call Amber MacArthur at home. If I had her number, I would. it's just amazing. I don't know anybody, but if I could, if I had their number, I'd call them. Get directions, even 911 assist. SyncMyRidePodcast.com. Give it a try. You ready to call? Should we call Max?
Let's give him a call. We're a few minutes late, but that's okay. Merlin, hey, Merlin, just while we call him, when is your book coming out?
Oh, I don't know. Next year.
He's working on it.
Okay. Yeah,
next year.
Do you have a name?
I've got to finish it pretty soon, and then it'll come out next year.
Do you have a name for it?
Hello?
I'm told that it's called Inbox Zero.
Inbox Zero is a good name.
Mm-hmm.
Good name. Max, you're very patient. Thanks for hanging on. Max Ventilla. Is it Ventilla or Ventilla? What do you like, Max?
Ventilla.
All right.
Ventilla.
He is with Aardvark, which is Vark.com.
Hey, Max.
How long have you been doing Aardvark, Max?
Just about 2.5 years now.
Was it your idea?
It was, and it was actually an idea that's been sort of around in my head for almost a decade since the first startup I started in Web 1.
What was the first startup?
It was a company called Cryptean, and what it would do is it would take emails within a company, and it would allow you to analyze those emails, especially backed up emails, and then power a searchable contacts and expertise directory. So you could find out in a big organization who knew what and who knew whom and get their contact details and send them a question directly. And Aardvark is sort of taking that sort of two steps beyond and doing it for a consumer audience, which is much harder and actually a lot more fun.
I'm impressed. Wow.
Can you just sort of, we talked a little bit about how Aardvark works, and I want to know, actually, do we call it Aardvark, or I know it's Vark. What do we go with? What's the right one?
We call it Aardvark, but it's sort of like a name and a nickname. Aardvark is its name.
Okay. So maybe just describe a little bit how it worked. We talked about it, how it works. We talked about it a little bit at the beginning of the show, but I'm sure you can do a better job.
Sure. So Aardvark is essentially a contact. You can IM it, you can email it, you can Twitter with it, and you can ask it a question just like it was a real human being asking in natural language with all the context and detail that the kinds of subjective questions that it's intended for require. And what Aardvark does is not try and answer your question, but actually route your question to the right person within your existing social network. And when we say your existing social network, we mean the one you've built up through things like Facebook or Twitter or web email. And when we say the right person, we mean literally using all of the profile and social graph data that's out there on the web to decide in the moment who has the relevant interests and experience and who's online, and we will actually send them your question in real time. And when they answer, the answer comes back to you, and you and they can continue to converse through Aardvark.
So that's really interesting. So it sounds like it's using some sort of artificial intelligence, the kind of thing that your original startup used, to somehow assess who's the expert here.
So that's exactly right. My co-founders include someone who's a absolutely amazing AI guy, Damon Horowitz, who's our CTO, and who's been doing this for a very long time. And we have three other very senior machine learning PhDs, and they basically build the AI on the back end. But the idea here is actually not that this is an AI product. We're reformed AI guys in that we don't think a machine can answer these kinds of questions. If you say, for example, I'm going to London and I'd love to stay near the financial district, but would love, an area that's still hip because I'm going to be staying there for a couple of days after and I'm actually not paying for the weekend or I'm paying for the weekend versus my work. There's a lot of context and detail there that a human can easily understand, especially someone from your network who shares your reference points and knows about London and travel and hotels. But a machine, even the best AI system in the world, is just not going to understand what you mean. And so what we've done is really split this task of answering the kinds of hard subjective questions that aren't easily addressed by a search engine into a piece that a machine does very, very well, i.e. finding the right person with all this tremendous social and profile data that's out there, and what a human does really well, which is to understand, you know, language and context and pick out the right bits from that individual's lengthy experience with the relevant topic.
And so instead of finding the answer, it finds the person who's likely to have the answer, kind of?
Exactly.
And that's really... Does that build up? Do they get woofy over time or something? Is there something where you learn who tends to provide the best answers in a certain context?
So we absolutely learn over time who provides the right answers, and the system is just getting smarter and smarter. We've been very intentional about not giving some artificial extrinsic reward. So it's really about helping people from your network about the topics that you're knowledgeable and passionate around. And it's not for points. There's no leaderboard. We don't pay you. It's really intended to follow the model of what happens in the real world, which is that people are constantly helping each other because it feels good.
I'll give you a really good example of it in real time that's happening right now. Marshall Kirkpatrick is listening of Read Write Web. We've had him on before. And he's talking in our friend feed room, saying, well, wait a minute, because I still see photos on Mark Zuckerberg's site. And Ken Shepardson saying, well, I don't see any photos in there. So who's right? Who, you know, did Mark block his photos or not? So Marshall asked on Vark.com, can anybody see the photos on Mark Zuckerberg's page? And he says, no, you know what? I just asked on Vark. Two people said they couldn't see him either. So we got immediate feedback from strangers. And, you know, tied into exactly what we were talking about, I think this could be really useful. Now, I've asked a stupid question, which is, who is the star of The Bridge on the River Kwai? And I don't have an answer yet.
Yeah, so in some senses, the question that you're asking is exactly the wrong question.
I shouldn't ask that kind of question.
Because it's really easily answered by Google.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can go into Google and you can type that in, and there's not a lot of motivation for the person on the other end to say, I'm really helping out this individual, and it's my particular knowledge and experience that is going to make me particularly capable of helping. This is really about subjective questions.
So there's the woofy. There's the woofy. You know, kind of it's subtle, but I'm going to answer a question that really is meaningful for me to answer. You know, I'm going to enjoy answering this as opposed to just Google at you, nitwit.
Yeah, I was just checking out some of the common questions like that are being asked in the past few minutes. Like, are 5 and 7-year-olds too young for Universal Studios? That's an example, which is a lot better than my question, which was, why is it so cold in Canada? So I guess that's not the type of thing.
Nobody knows that. That's just.
I don't know. I think that one's okay. I think that's still a subjective question and could lead to a funny interaction. Really, it's just the way we think about this is exactly as you said, Leo. A great question is someone that if it's routed to the right person, they will really enjoy answering it and feel like they're adding value due to who they are and what they know. And another way to think about it is if you can add a second sentence to your question and make it more likely that someone can give you just that perfect response, then it's ideal for Aardvark. If there's no second sentence that you could add, like if I said, you know, in what year was Einstein born? There's not really a second
more
sentence
to that,
that I
right.
can
but,
add.
I mean, doesn't that hurt your credibility if you're unable to answer? If somebody comes in and they ask, I went in and asked, what's the best Beatles album?
That's
and
subjective.
You would tell me that that's not the right kind of question for Aardvark. But,
no, that sounds like
that's
exactly
a great question.
Yeah,
no,
it's so subjective.
If you added a second sentence, like describing what you mean by best, it's more likely that you get a better answer.
I don't know. In my experience, it's exactly the opposite on the internet, is that the people have like fairly endless numbers of opinions and like answering softballs. So I'm just curious.
Well, that's what he's saying. He's saying this is a good question for Aardvark.
It told me it was too short.
Oh, it said it was too short.
Well,
oh, okay.
but so this is a way in which this is not like the internet. This is like real life. So when you ask on the internet, people like softball questions, and generally you tend to get an answer from someone that likes answering versus someone that has the right answer or the best answer for you.
Does it hurt your credibility if somebody asks a question and it's not answered? If you say it's not our kind of question?
So we answer 90% of questions that people ask. And the vast majority that aren't answered are not particularly great questions. Now, that said, we view what exists on the rest of the web as a great complement to what we've built. So there are fantastic forum sites. There are great search engine resources and user-generated content sites that do a great job of answering the kind of questions that Aardvark isn't intended to answer. And increasingly over time, we will draw better ties to those so that you're always getting your satisfaction from somewhere. But we've chosen to go after a part of sort of the question intent pie that's not very well addressed by what's online now. And I'll draw this back to Twitter as well, which is, as you said, a great place where you can float a question out there, even a subjective one, and have it answered, ideally people that are somewhat relevant to you, assuming that your followers have something to do with your interests and tastes. The difference here is that this is not broadcast. It's only about a half dozen people that receive your question. Uh-huh. And yet, we're able to answer the majority of questions in under 5 minutes. And the quality of answers that comes back is very, very high. And it's because there's real intelligence built into the system, the same way that if I sent you, Leo, or you, Amber, or you, Merlin, a question, mm-hmm. You wouldn't send it out to every person you've ever met. You'd sit there and think about who is the best combination of having some time on their hands and having relevant knowledge, and also wanting to answer this kind of question.
You know, it's interesting. I'm looking at the site. So there's two tabs. There's an ask tab, but there's also an answer tab. So you're saying these are the questions that your AI, your best guess for questions that I might be able to answer?
So there's actually two ways that we generate answers. One are this kind of pull answering experience, which is exactly what you're showing now, where right. someone comes to Aardvark and they essentially say, you know, I've got some time and I'd like to be helpful. Where we generate the majority of our answers is actually the push answering experience, where we will IM someone, we will email someone, we will contact them directly with a targeted question, and we'll only do that, you know, once a day or whatever their explicit contact settings are.
I've added you to my IM, and now Aardvark's an IM buddy. So I might, if I keep, every once in a while, you might ask me something. If
That's
you
right.
think I could answer it.
That's right. And we'll gradually learn over time about when to contact you, how much to contact you, about what, and from whom.
I think that's kind of interesting. And what you're saying is there is Wuffy here, because people do want to kind of participate in this kind of game. Because they like answering questions and they like kind of being the person who knew. Marshall is a fan of yours. Marshall Kirkpatrick on Read Write Web, when Bing was launched, the Twitter search on Bing was launched, used Aardvark to ask people who are experts in user experience, and they used your IM interface, and he got interviews with three people, content from three people, user interface designers, about the Bing Twitter interface, and got an article out of it. So I could see journalists might really like this as a way to find sources.
Well, it's nice, especially sources that are maybe the best sources, not just people who like to generally answer.
Right, they have experience.
And also people
in the
from
matter.
Their yeah. actual network who are otherwise, when you talk about sort of second-degree contacts, friends of friends, pretty hard to get at directly. And this is really a way that we're taking advantage of both the tremendous amount of information that's in every person's head that's not written down anywhere online and never will be, and also the fact that every person is now walking around, assuming that you participate in some kind of social web application, with 50,000 friends of friends. And this is a way to actually get some sort of information utility out of those people in a way that they actually enjoy, and something that is highly differentiated about Aardvark from other sort of QA sites or bulletin board style interactions is that a very, very large fraction of the user base over the long term is contributing answers, as opposed to just, you know, a few percent who's generating 99-100% of the content.
So Marshall wants me to ask you a question. According to TechCrunch, you're mulling over, have been for a week now, a $30 million offer from Google.
That is one of many, many rumors that have always been sort of circulating around us. generally, we don't really talk about rumors. In this case, if there's anything to report, we certainly will report it in the future.
It does seem like something that a company like Google would be very interested in. I mean, imagine the additional value to a search engine to have this kind of human-powered, you know, expert system around.
Mm-hmm. I did get an answer for my Canada question, by the way.
Oh, good. Why is Canada colder?
Well, I asked why Toronto, Canada is so cold, and someone said it's very mild in Toronto compared to the rest of the country. Sorry, but comments like these are why Toronto has a bad rep.
Oh, dear.
Oh. You got a snotty Varker.
Yes, snotty Varker, my way.
Every person brings their own network to the table, so it's not our fault. Ever.
So you're finding my social graph, because when I signed up, I connected via Facebook, and then I would presumably add the rest of my social graph to this over time, and that's who would be asked?
That's right. So over 50% of people connect with Facebook. When you add a bunch of the other social web applications that we support, the vast majority of people do have their social graph synced with Aardvark. And frankly, that's a lot of the value proposition. So especially when you look at who's continuing to use the service over time, it's a large... in large proportion, people who have their social graph in there, and as the network grows, it's just more and more of your friends and friends of friends and classmates and coworkers who are available in the pool to be routed your questions directly.
And you control how often you're asked, and
that's right. Yeah. You control it, and also the system learns. So even if you had some very frequent contact setting, if you're ignoring us, right, we'll gradually lower and lower the contact frequency until it seems appropriate.
And you can add some topics that you feel that you're an expert in. And this is quite intriguing, quite an interesting idea.
I'm curious, though, why isn't there more of an area where you're sharing the answers that you're giving out on Aardvark? Because I can't seem to really find that. Maybe I'm not looking in the right place, but...
It's not there, Amber.
Okay. Okay.
So, again, there are lots and lots of sites that do that really, really well online. If you're looking for pre-existing content, if you go to a search engine or you go to a vertical review site, you'll get more content than we're going to generate for a long time. On the other hand, Aardvark is useful for content that no one has ever written online, especially no one from your network who shares your reference points and is available to exactly answer your question in the moment. So it sort of defeats the purpose to say, you know, ask any question and we'll tap the right person in your network to respond in the moment, and then say, oh, but you can also look at all these canned answers.
But the rest of the web does that. I'm having trouble understanding how there's any economies of scale to what you're doing. It sounds like you're basically putting a bunch of smart people in voting booths and asking people to walk up and talk to them. Where's the network effect for this becoming something that would be useful to a lot of people? I mean, it seems like your answers to a lot of the questions are, well, it's not supposed to be this and it's not supposed to be that. Well, who's it for? And then how would I ever know it's for me? You know,
this is the same problem that Wolfram Alpha has, which is...
No. So maybe I'm not explaining correctly. The
every time somebody asks you a question about a limitation, you try to turn it into a benefit. And to me, I bought that up until the point where you said that you can't see old answers to stuff, because I just don't understand the scale in that.
So the scale comes from the fact that each person is a asker and an answerer, and that every individual using the service brings a very large network of responders to the table. And so the same way that if you looked in your email, you would find that you've asked many questions directly of people in your network, and they've been answered, and you've answered many questions directly from people in your network, and the system scales perfectly fine without, you know, Gmail sharing all of the content of people's questions and answers with the world. Aardvark scales because as you ask a question, there are always people in your network available to answer that in the moment. And yet, no individual is being bombarded with tons and tons and tons of questions at a higher frequency than they would want.
Do you think, though, at any point you'll open up some of the answers? And I'm just saying this because I find some of the questions people have asked, maybe not questions that I necessarily would think about, but when I'm looking through some of the popular questions that just got answered, I'm so curious about the answers. Like, it's just human nature that I would want to know. For instance, someone asked about that, what is the best client for instant messaging on the Mac? And there's a bunch of really useful questions that I think the content behind that could be shared. Do you plan to ever open that up?
So we're constantly looking at whether or not there are ways to share that content that fits with our model, which is that things are private by default and you really are engaging in a one-on-one conversation with another person. And as a result, you feel free to say whatever you'd want to say if the person emailed you directly. We're trying to constantly think about how to create additional value. But what we found is that as soon as you make the information public, it really does change the nature of the service. And also that we don't necessarily have a very strong competitive advantage in generating a bunch of public content and making it, you know, more accessible. So Merlin, it's not that I would say that us not doing these things are a strength, but rather that if we don't have a way to do it better than how people are already doing it, and in fact, if we think what we would provide is worse than a lot of the best of breed solutions out there, then we've tended to save our engineering resources for tasks where we really do think we're doing something novel and have an advantage. So I certainly think it would be great for us, in addition for all the things that we're doing, to have a tremendous amount of public content that's searchable and useful in the moment. We would tend to say that other people are doing that really, really well, and we need to figure out how to tie into what they've done rather than reinvent the wheel. And
but you,
that's
to
exactly
your benefit,
what we're trying
to do. It sounds like you've created a low noise solution. I mean, for me, like I said earlier, for me, the answer to this quote unquote question, I guess, is Ask Metafilter, where I it's always one of the top returns on Google when I answer a question. So I end up going there first a lot. I guess the question I didn't mean to, I'm not sure if I put it well, but it was just more to understand, like, what if you were acquired, would they be acquiring talent? Would they be acquiring technology? What is it that you're making?
Certainly, it's first and foremost the people. So we have an amazing team of about 30 people with 20 technical people, and it's their built up experience prior to Aardvark and then with Aardvark in this space that is the most valuable thing we have. It's also a tremendous amount of user experience research and refinement of the interaction model with Aardvark that is, in our minds, a key store of value. And then it's obviously the brains on the back end. So being able to take a tremendous amount of structured and unstructured data from where it already exists on the web and using that for this new purpose, which is to find the right individual in the moment to give you an answer versus actually finding the answer already on the web, that's where we see our value, and that's where we think we've built up something that is valuable to us and which might be valuable to someone else in the future.
I think it's one of those things that you got to try it. It's very hard to communicate how it works until you try it. And now that I've been playing with it a little bit, I think I understand it a little bit better. And I can see some use cases for it. But it doesn't fit easily into any box that I know.
That's always been one of our biggest challenges. And I think we're similar to Twitter in that regard, that you just have to try it. And in fact, I think whenever you're trying to do something that's radically new, it's going to have that aspect to it. And our at least benefit is at least there's a real world model, which is the human intermediary. You know, that friend who knows everybody, and you can just ask them a question and they'll know just the right individual to ask, and they'll bear all the social cost of putting you in touch with someone, and you get your satisfaction that way. And also, it is relatively easy to describe why we're valuable, which is that when you're online and you're trying to find information and you're frustrated and you feel like someone must know, someone's been through this before, and they could just tell me, and then I could move on to the next thing in my life and I wouldn't need to be frustrated anymore, that's when you go to Aardvark, because we're all about finding that person who knows in the moment.
It's very interesting. Max, very thank you. Thank you for joining
thank
us. I'm going to
so
play
much.
With it a little bit,
sure.
Get a better sense of it. Max Ventilla, VARK.com if you want to sign up and play with it. I've added my Twitter, and now I've got my whole social graph. It's really just Twitter and Facebook is your social graph right there.
And your web email. So things
and
like
email.
Gmail or Yahoo
right.
Mail
right.
or IM.
Right. They're all in there. And the IM, I love the IM interface. There's also an iPhone interface, which I'm downloading and installing right now. So I can ask questions on the road. Thank you, Max.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye-bye. Nice talking to you.
Bye.
Good questions, Merlin. I think it's, you know, people are all saying in the chat room, yeah, Merlin's asking, putting them on the spot there.
I don't know about that. I just don't understand things very well, and it helps to ask questions.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think just the frustrating part is just that if you know that one person is frustrated because they can't find an answer to a question, I feel like you should be giving that answer to multiple people. And that's kind of the nature of the web. I don't know if it's like an internet hippie mentality, but I feel like sharing is definitely a core value.
To use a very old phrase that we used to use to death in the .com era, it's the network effect, which is mm-hmm. the reason that people are on Facebook now and they're not on Friendster or Orkut so much
right.
anymore.
Right.
The network effect means that you get economies of scale out of more people using something.
But this
and that's
doesn't
why,
use that. This is completely different. I mean, the network effect
is... why I asked the questions
yeah,
I was asking.
Yeah. I mean,
and that's why when somebody like Andy goes, where should I buy some pants? You know, thousands of people...
He does it on Twitter.
For him.
Yeah.
Because well, there's lots of reasons. People like answering questions that they know the answer to. It's like your own little personal pub night, you know? And I think that's natural. And that's why I think, one reason I like Ask Metafilter so much is there is a lot of, sure, there's noise like anywhere else, but it's imminently searchable. It has a super smart taxonomical, much better than most blogs in terms of related posts. There's tagging, which for once ends up being useful. I'm just I just never understand why
why tie it to your graph, I guess is the question I would ask.
Oh, because they want all that user data. Don't you think? Why does anybody want you to bring in your
right.
Gmail contacts?
Right.
That's
right.
The richest thing that Google has apart from a brilliant ad network is the right. ability to know everything you do. And mm-hmm. the more richly you aggregate that data, the more you can do with it.
It's a profit thing. Damn. I miss that every
Damn.
Time. Damn.
You know what, Leo? Leo, ask me anything. Ask me anything. Go ahead.
No,
I'm serious. I'm not gonna call on anyone else. Just on my own resources, going to a public school. Ask me anything.
You answered the question, by the way, who was the star of Bridge Over the River Kwai quite well.
It depends. I think it was the soundtrack. I would also be Alec Guinness.
I think the soundtrack was the right answer. Certainly was the
like
funny
that.
Answer.
You know, I see what I did. I took and I turned it.
You turned it. You're so quick.
You're that fast. You're like the human Vark.
He's a human Vark.
Are you saying I should get a valuation?
I think your hair is of aardvark quality. Hey, real quickly. Whoa, that's scary hair. Real quickly, I want to talk a little bit about, before we get scary hair, and then our song of the day also, audible.com. It is a wonderful place to get audiobooks of all kinds. I listen to Audible all the time. In fact, when I had the commute, I discovered Audible.com, and I got several hundred books under my belt. And that's the beauty of Audible.com is you could get reading done at those times when you normally wouldn't be reading, in the car, at the gym. This is if I give you all of the books I've ever bought on Audible.com. And by the way, I'm looking at my library now. The beauty is I can get them again. I can download them at any time. So it's all there for you. Audible.com. That's the place to go to get the amazing stuff. And if you want to get a free book, go to audible.com/night, N-I-G-H-T, and you can sign up for the gold account. Your first book's free and yours to keep forevermore, even if you decide to cancel. Some wonderful books. Go to audible.com and take a test drive. Pick a book and enjoy it. A lot of movie titles. I was mentioning Up in the Air, that new... movie.
Oh, so good.
Is it a good movie? I can't wait to see it.
Oh my gosh. I don't go to movies anymore. We went and got a sitter and everything, and we went, and it was
cool.
Fantastic.
Did you know that it was originally a kind of a snarky novel by Walter Kim?
No, I did not. I try to avoid hearing everything I can about a movie or a book before I consume it.
See, I always like to read the book before the movie if I can, especially if I listen to it.
Yeah.
Because then that makes it a movie in my mind, and then I can go from there. Anyway,
Silence of the Lambs. You got to do that with Silence of the Lambs. Now it's too late for most people.
Perfect example. Perfect example. Nothing more horrible than what your mind can do. Your mind is much more adept at creating these incredible things. Up in the Air by Walter Kim. That's our recommendation for the night. You get it for free before you see the movie.
Oh, I had a recommendation.
Oh, go ahead. I didn't know.
What is it?
I didn't want to put you on the spot.
That's fine. And I thought I knew how the show worked. I guess not.
Don't leave, Merlin.
By the way, I got my answer from Aardvark.
Yeah.
Sir William Guinness.
Oh, God.
People. People, please.
It's Roby Bonobi.
Roby won Bonobi.
Roby won Bonobi.
So what? You've been listening to Audible lately?
I went out and bought this. I bought this on Audible or via iTunes because I can't get through. I love this guy's novels so much. But the language, it's like eating 100 fudge sundaes on every page. Blood Meridian by Cormac McCarthy.
Oh.
Go ahead and pull up the sample. Go ahead and pull
up the sample. You want to hear the sample?
All right. You just got to let people understand. The entire book is like this.
Now, The Road, we've mentioned The Road before, which is also now a movie, and it's a really good audiobook.
Blood Meridian is the one that's the most, so far in my reading of. Yeah, it's, can you play a sample
from it? Yeah, we'll just play a little sample. Here you go. This is Blood Meridian, Richard Poe reading.
Spider-like among the bowls of cotton. A shadowed agony in the garden. Against the sun's declining, figures moving in the slower dusk across a paper skyline. A lone dark husbandman pursuing mule and harrow down the rain-blown bottomland.
I just got to pause it and think for a moment.
It's all,
holy
you read
cow.
Read on writing by Stephen King,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Yeah.
This is not that.
Well, no, but it's one of those. He gives examples of style. I'm trying to pull this up real quick.
This is style.
And I first decided to read this book when I was listening to his book on tape of it. And it's one of my all-time favorite paragraphs. Oh, shoot.
This is a great book. You know what? Any writer should read this Stephen King book on writing. It's brilliant.
Oh, yeah, totally, totally. But anyway,
and by the way, I did listen to that on Audible as well. Yeah,
and he also did the Coen Brothers movie that everybody liked. That was Cormac McCarthy as well, right?
The Big Lebowski.
Nah. Am I wrong?
No. I don't know. There's a lot of good.
I don't know.
He did No Country for Old Men.
Oh, really? That's right. It was a Cormac McCarthy novel. You're right.
Yeah. Anyway,
see, I'd like to read that first too, because you know that was a very powerful movie. But I bet the book was even more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Blood Meridian. Mm-hmm. That's a good pick. Can we make that our pick instead?
Well, I don't want to shake anything up. I mean, I'm just an outsider.
You're not an outsider.
Shut up, outsider. You know, it was Amber that introduced you to me.
I remember you guys were the first podcast before I even like mostly knew what podcasts were. You were the first podcast I ever did. Was you guys?
I vividly remember we were sitting in the office at Call for Help in Toronto and talking to you via Skype. Recording that. It was not
easy. It was 1973.
Easy.
Can you believe that?
Unbelievable.
So much has changed. Spiro Agnew's dead now. Everything's different, Leo. And now cars are different. And the clothes, and the hair.
The brake pedal's
even
on the left
big
now.
Needs anymore. It's wrong.
I know. Audible.com/night. Don't let this slip slip away from you. I don't know what
Sir
I'm
William
talking
Guinness.
About. Sir William Guinness, ladies and gentlemen. The star of Bridge Superimposed on a River Called Kwai.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Before we let Merlin go, we just got to give him a group hug. Group hug.
Oh, yes, Merlin.
Mm-mm-mm-mm. We
it's
love
so
you, Merlin.
It's so great to see you again.
Oh, this is. You guys should have me do this sometimes. I'd really enjoy that. I don't really do anything. I just think
would
about
you,
email. I would do this. I would
love
do this
to
all
have
time.
You
I
on.
Nothing else to do.
See, yeah. I knew if a pretty girl asked you, you'd say yes.
No, I.
Oh,
I
ask, but no. Oh no.
No, I just want to be loved by anybody. I'm a pretty girl would be nice, but I'm really not that picky. Guys with inhalers, ladies at toll booths, you know, coffee vendors. Just anyway. Like gotta make everybody laugh. It's ridiculous.
Are you excited about your second Christmas with Eleanor?
Yes, I am. I was looking over the things I was considering getting for her today. I think there's going to be some Richard Scarry books.
Oh yes, Busy Town, baby.
Yeah, the pigs are all butchers.
Mm-hmm.
And no, it's exciting. It's that time of year when the world falls in love, and it's nice.
She doesn't. Nice. Does she? Will you think she'll know that it's Christmas?
Oh, can you kidding me? She's pumped, man.
Oh, this
really?
Is really so. It's really her first Christmas. When you're one, you don't know it. You don't know what's
no,
going
Connor
on.
No, Connor has no idea what's going on.
Now the first Christmas that's going to be frustrating. It'll be fun for you, but he's just going to be like,
it's like the first birthday. They don't know. But so she knows it's Christmas. Does she know about Santa Claus?
And she knows about presents under the tree. And every morning, personal insight, but every morning we have to get up and we have to go greet the Santa Claus, the figurine that we've got, and we give him a pat on the head and we talk about presents.
Do you have a advent calendar?
We do. She calls it book. And every morning she wants book because that means she gets a chocolate.
Isn't that so it's jealous?
Nice. It's whatever. She's fine. She's fine for what she is.
You were at the most wonderful time of your life. Are you kidding?
I'm a baby.
No, you're right though. When you're right, you're right, Amber. It does make you think about your stupid life kind of differently. That's for sure.
Oh, I love it. I've always been a happy person, but I'm like 10 times happier. No one can get me upset about anything because I just don't care.
I don't drink when I drive a motorcycle anymore. That's one thing. I just said I'm not going to do that anymore. You can ride the motorcycle or you can drink, but you can't
not
do
both. Not together.
At the same time.
Not anymore.
That's good. It's good you've learned.
Well, we just love you, Merlin. We'll get you back here. We will absolutely get you back here.
Please come back on,
anytime you want, on any show on Twit, of course, you know.
You just take the show and come on?
You just show up.
Like walk on, like Bob Hope?
Yeah. You know that, Merlin. You know that's absolutely, both of you have the standing invitation. There's only a few people that I would say anytime, any day.
I don't think your viewers like these visits.
We're raving about it because, frankly, whenever Amber and I have somebody on, we just go, well, tell us about it, and we give them softballs. And you were in there saying, what the heck is this? I don't get it. And I thought that was great.
We get pretty excited about the stuff, so we forget about all the other questions.
I sign up for everything. I go, oh, that's neat. Oh, that'd be good. Oh, I love that.
No, it looks like a neat service. That's a very pretty sight.
It's well done. Great. Yeah.
But no, seriously, thank you very much for having me.
Thank you, Merlin.
Okay, Merlin, I'm going to get in touch with you again soon to come back on at some point at your convenience.
Promises. And Twit Nation, everybody, happy holidays.
Happy holidays, Merlin.
You too.
Bye. You know, I should say one more thing. Yeah. Thursday, we're doing our Twit holiday special with Colton and Hodgman. And if you would like to show up as a fourth, 4 o'clock Thursday, I'll send you a note.
And
it would be wonderful to have you as a fourth.
It's not John Hodgman, though, is it?
John? No, his brother Ernie. Yeah, John Hodgman.
I've got a beef with that guy.
You do? Can we have a little fight? that'd be fun.
What are we going to do, throw dungeon dice at each other?
Yeah. You messed up my 40 paladin. So,
sir, that was my vorpal blade that you left out last night.
In the rain.
I'm doing nothing all day Thursday. I'm thinking about a book all day Thursday. Got nothing to do.
Good. All right. Hodgman, Colton, and Mann.
All right. I'm there. What time?
That way, 4 p.m. That way I could sit back. I don't have to do anything and just let the jokes flow.
Yeah. Just got to stay out of Hodgman's way. That's the key. You just got to let that guy
run. True. It's really true. It'll be really fun. All right. Deal.
Merry Christmas and Happy Hanukkah and Kwanzaa and Festivus and what have you to everybody.
Have a wonderful solstice.
Very much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye, Merlin. We'll talk to you soon.
I'm going to cry.
He's so sweet.
I'm just, there's just some people. There's certain people that you die to work with. You're one of them, Amber MacArthur, and he's another one.
I remember when the three of us, we were in Toronto and I took you guys, I had just started working at City TV and I took you guys on a tour of City TV and then the three of us went and had dinner across the street at a place I think called Queen Mother. We had kind of Thai food and we sat in a little booth and it was kind of cold out and it was so much fun. We just laughed the whole time.
Oh, we had a great time.
I know.
Anyway.
Okay, let's
wrap this up. You got a baby. We got a song. This is a remix. Tell us about Indaba Music, because this is a really neat site.
I actually don't know a lot about Indaba Music. Leo, I think this is the first time I've come across it.
I know about it. You know why? Because we did a remix of the Tech Guy theme on Indaba. Ashley Witt, who's a composer who did the original Tech Guy theme, was very kind. He gave us all the work parts, and we invited our listeners to do remixing. And that's what this site is all about. It's a home for musicians. You share your music, but you can also join remix contests. And that's what's going on right now. They're calling it Phone Wars.
So funny. Yeah, they're having a contest where you create a ringtone, and it's a battle between the Motorola Droid and the iPhone, and you're supposed to create a sound effect remix, and creating that remix, you need to use, I think it's at least one of the sound effects or the sounds found on either the iPhone or the Droid in your remix, as far as I understand. You can just kind of have a little bit of fun with it and submit it to the contest, which is finished at the end of December.
And people vote. That's the cool thing. I mean, you win by getting the most votes. It's not judges or anything like that. Do you have one? Do you want me to play the number one first place vote getter right now? Or do you have one?
Yeah, this is a Droid user who has sent this in. So it's just kind of a fun little ringtone that he's created.
This is Aurelian Stride. It is the current number one vote getter on Indaba Music, indabamusic.com, and their phone wars. Amber, thank you so much. It's great to see you. Happy holidays to you. I guess we'll gather again in a week, just a few days before Christmas.
Yeah, we will. I'll see you next Tuesday, and we have guests already booked for the first couple weeks of January, so we're in good shape.
We're busy. Well, we'll see you next time on Net at Night. Good night, everybody.
Good?
It's great.
All right, Leo, I'll see you later.
Good night, Amber. Thank you.